snuck asleep in their beds. And this old man is walking down the hill, and he's walking down next to this dog that I was just singing about, of course. And you guys know the story. It's the famous Arhua. It's Halloween night, Arhua sometimes takes on some of the most evil shapes of all, his fangs growing longer, ugly mucus coming off his face and turning into an awful killing machine. And so these two people are walking down into town, and as they walk down into town, the people of the town are all asleep, and they don't know what's coming. But these two people, the evil people, are coming towards them. As they sleep, they're all dreaming together. If you can picture this, they're all having this terrible nightmare. As they're having this terrible nightmare, the eeriest thing about it is that they're all dreaming the same dream simultaneously. So here comes the man walking to town, and the people are dreaming the same simultaneous dream.
See something scurry, so I walk towards the bathroom. I walk in the bathroom, and it's a raccoon. I say, "Watch it, Rocky!" I push the raccoon into the bathtub quickly and walk back towards the bathroom door, closing it. And turn around, heading towards the bedrooms. Suddenly, I see motion in the bedrooms. I walk towards that motion, and I can start to see many raccoons in the bedroom. Hundreds of raccoons in the bedroom, coming at me. So I walk towards those bedroom doors, trying to push what would be the raccoons backwards into the bedroom, one raccoon at a time, but it seems like there are many, many, too many raccoons. And they start coming towards me, and I start coming towards them, and I start to notice that they're tiny raccoons! Baby raccoons!
Everyone was dreaming this dream at the same time, just as you will all dream this dream when you come home tonight. But no, one person wasn't dreaming. That one person was Jimmy. Jimmy wasn't dreaming the dream because Jimmy wasn't asleep. Jimmy was actually sitting on the couch with his little pussy cat, posted up down. Jimmy was sitting with Poster Nutback and playing his favorite album, which, lo, was the very same album that Fish was playing as her Halloween album at Rosemont's House.
Thank you.
Look! The storm's gone.
Yes, Dad?
Jimmy, I have bad news.
What is it, Dad?
Jimmy, it's your cat.
You mean, who's your nutbag?
fat swimming full dog. Stood in the sun, stone cold swamp man. Slow motion, unintended Pokemon leads walker. Precious birthday fudge, swamp knife, full mail. Walker dun dun, Lee and Hapua. We couldn't care fewer. It happens all the time. We beat Okibo. We couldn't care fewer. It happens all the time. We beat Okibo. Hot liquor, stone jack, bitter toothless flesh, shabby pimple chin slime.
We'll help you party down.
We couldn't care if you were. It happens all the time. We beat Okibo. Me and Hapua. We couldn't care if you were. It happens all the time. We beat Okibo.
Thank you all so much for being a part of this whole thing. It's just incredible, man. Incredible. Other than that guy, it was incredible. No, really. Unbelievable. Thank you, really. Anyway, I'm going to just leave you with this last little story about something that I was kind of dreaming about last night. It, of course, takes place with our old friend Jimmy, who you know so much, in the outskirts of Gamehenge somewhere. And on this particular day, Jimmy is in his house, and as you know, what I was just singing about was Harpua, the evil man, and Gamehenge and all that stuff, and you know what's going on. But on this particular day, our good friend Jimmy is sitting on his couch in his house, and he's sitting on his couch, and as he's sitting there, he starts to drift off into sort of a dreamland. And as he drifts off into dreamland, he's kind of eyes rolling back in his head, and he's drifting off, and he starts to have this incredible dream. And in this incredible dream, he realizes that he can fly. So he looks forward at the window in front of him, and with his mind, he lifts up the window, because he's in this lucid dream. And he starts to go out the window, and he goes out the window, and he's flying along, and it's just the most beautiful, deep, amazing dream he's ever had. He feels like the air underneath his arms pushing as he kind of pushes up, and it gets better and better. Everything is crystalline and crisp around him. He can smell the beautiful, clean air, and he pushes with his arms, and he feels himself flying, and he goes up and higher up into the air. As he flies, he realizes he's sort of flying through time and through space all at the same time, so that everything is kind of blending into one. And as he flies along, he comes over and he starts to fly over the Clifford ball. And he looks down on the Clifford ball. And as he flies over, he gets this incredible energy from this audience, all these people that were here hanging out, and all the people up at the ball square, just beaming up towards him. And he feels himself kind of turning into this mass of beams of color and beams of sparks flying off his arms. And he just looks down and he thinks to himself, what an amazing weekend it's been.
Thank you.
Suburb on the outskirts of Bainbridge, standing on a beautiful green day.
And we look to our right and we see a street going down the road, and it's a beautiful suburban street. And we look to our left and we see a mountain rising up out of the sky. And we look to this direction, we see a forest going off in the distance. We realize that we are in the suburbs on the outskirts of Gainbridge. And on this particular day, somewhere down in a little white house with a little door down the street, on the suburban street, there lived a little boy named Jimmy. On this particular day, Jimmy is feeling a little bit anxious because he's been sitting in suburbia for so long. He's bored, he's anxious, and he decides that he's going to go on a crazy trip. So he decides that he's going to take his little feline friend, his cat, his beautiful confidant, his pussycat, his best friend, Poster Nutbag. And then the two of them are going to go on a little trip. So what they decide they're going to do is they decide they're going to walk all the way from the outskirts of Gainbridge to the bright neon lights and the golden opportunities and the huge buildings of Las Vegas, Nevada. That's right, he's going to take his life savings out of his savings bank and he is going to take it to Las Vegas, Nevada. He's going to lay it down on the roulette table and he's become a very, very rich man in a short period of time, as we all have in the last couple days, right? So he says, that's right, he looks down to his little feline friend, Poster Nutbag, and he says, Poster, you know, it's been a long time that since we went on a real adventure, so let's go. Off he goes, he walks out the door, he takes a left, he goes down the street, he walks down the street, he walks past the school, he walks past the fire department, and he keeps walking and walking, and slowly the buildings start to melt away, and eventually he finds himself trotting through the desert, you know, because he forgets that Las Vegas is in the middle of nowhere, and so he's walking and walking, and the day is getting longer, walking, and he's walking, and he's walking, and they're both walking, and he looks down, and and they walk, and he pets, and they walk. And they walk, and they walk, and slowly it gets darker and darker. And eventually he realizes that he's been walking for so long, he's not going to make it to Vegas on this particular night. So he decides he's going to have to set up camp, just like the people who first came off across the desert. He finds a little rocky area, and he puts a few rocks in a circle, and he puts some twigs, and he makes a little fire. And he sits down with Poster Nutbag, and he says, "Here we shall camp for the night." So the two of them sit down, and he leans back against the rock, puts his hand behind his head. He's looking down and says, "You know, this is really beautiful, Poster. You know, Poster Nutbag, my feline friend. Just me and you, all alone, out here in the desert, 1,000 miles from the city lights. I look you in the eye, and I catch you, and I look at you, and I look at your beautiful feline eyes." And it was such a moving and touching moment as the two of them looked into each other's eyes in the middle of the desert, that they leaned back and they began to break into song. And not only did they break into song, but they began to yodel together. It was a beautiful yodeling sound, drifting off in the distance as the moon hung above them, and they looked at each other, and they began to yodel, 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 singing that old country tune, singing that old country tune, yodel, yodel. Thank you. beautiful touching moment as they yodeled, and then they rolled out their bed rolls and went to sleep. And when they woke up, they looked around and they realized that they were not far from Vegas. They were actually camping out in the Red Rocks mountain area. And they looked around. Yes. This is not Red Rocks in Colorado. This is the Red Rocks, for those of you who haven't been there. The Red Rocks right near here, half an hour from here. They woke up and they were kind of in this little cave. They looked up at all these orange rocks and they thought, we are not far from Vegas. So they began to walk. And they walked again and walked. Fish? They walked. Now he's gone. Anyway, they walked along. And they walked and they walked, and finally they got to the outskirts of Vegas, you know? First they saw the cloud above the town, and they saw some neon off in the distance, and some scary kind of, they were going through a really eerie, kind of scary neighborhood when they first got there. And as they walked down this one road, they were almost there where they were going to get rich and famous, but suddenly these people started coming out, kind of from, you know, lurking in the corners. They realized that there were some scary guys from the outskirts of town who were going to make trouble. And so here's Jimmy, he's looking around, and these guys start to come up to him, and he sees that there's about four of them, and as they get closer, he realizes that there are actually four Elvises walking towards him. And just as the Elvises approached him, they said, the four Elvises came up to him, here they are now, the four Elvises. And the four Elvises said, you can't come into Vegas unless you beat us at your own game. You've got to sing an Elvis song better than us in order to be accepted into Vegas. So Jimmy said, I can do it. He said, I can sing an Elvis song better than you. I'll take you on right now, anytime, any place. So, I'm sorry. And it worked. He won the battle of the Elvises. They let him go to Las Vegas because the Elvises had a good heart. They knew that he was quite a man to be able to sing Suspicious Minds with that much work. Goodbye, Elvises.
How about a hand for the Elvises?
He did it. He got into it. He got into it. Las Vegas. Good, because he felt like he was in the spirit of Vegas, having beaten the Elvises at their own game. He took his $12 that he had saved in his piggy bank, and he went into the casino. He walked down the street. He went past Caesar's Palace and all the others until he saw the Aladdin beaming in front of him. And he walked in the door, and he walked up to the roulette table, and he took his life savings, and he said, I know what number it's going to be. It's going to be number 17, if you saw it. And I'm telling you all to take all your money, walk out this door and put it on 17. You too. And be rich people tonight. 17. Anyway, just as he was reaching down to lay the money on number 17, suddenly what he didn't realize is that Harpua, the mangy dog that the original song was about, had been following the scent of Poster Nutbag all the way from the outskirts of Gamehenge to Vegas. And he had caught the scent of the campfire that they had slept by, and of the yodelers and the Elvises, and finally he had traced the scent all the way into the Aladdin. And as he walked up, he came through the door and he saw Poster Nutbag across the room. And before Jimmy could put his money down on number 17, suddenly the dog and the cat caught each other's eye across the room. There are little beams of hatred going back and forth between the cat and the dog's eyes. Everybody in the casino sensed that there was going to be a horrible fight. They clear a circle around the blackjack tables. Suddenly the fight begins.
It needs lubrication, cliche.
There's a dog in the station contemplating rotation as a form of recreation.
Suzanne, 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 happens once in a while, but then she robs you. She's always afraid that she's not sure what she's worth. She's out of her mind, and she's not a deserter. The woman wants to dress like she's the queen of the town. Doesn't talk very much. She's very profound. Susie Greenberg, always playing the game. Thank you.
Anyway, one of these houses in this little town, there was a boy named Jimmy who you've all heard about. And on this particular day, Jimmy was sitting in his house, as he did on many afternoons, petting his beautiful little cat, Poster Nutbag. Yes. And he's sitting here on this train, he's petting his cat, Poster Nutbag, unaware of the man on top of the hill coming down with an evil dog. I am skipping the beginning of the story because I assume that most of you have heard it before. For those of you who don't know what's going on at the beginning of the story, there's a lot of preliminary stuff, but just ask the person next to you. There's this guy with his dog, and he comes down. Because I really want to get to the meat of the story here.
Meat!
The meat.
Meat!
I'm actually rushing through the preliminaries to get to the meat of the story. Yes, there he is with his dog, Poster Nutbag, and he goes to Jimmy, goes to open the door, and lets Poster Nutbag out the door. Dog, as he does in every story coming down the hill, dog, cat, coming towards each other, get into a fight. Now we are at the meat of the story. Picture the dog, picture the cat fighting. The incredible thing about this particular day is that the fight between the cat and the dog was so ferocious that they began spinning around each other, clawing and biting and hissing and drooling and tearing at each other's breasts. So viciously that they began to spin in a circle, and they actually spun so fast that they created a tornado. So the dog and the cat are fighting, spinning, creating a tornado. The tornado is spinning faster and faster, sucking all of the surrounding houses in, the Christmas presents, the trees, all sucking in, more and more vicious. The tornado begins to spin so fast, so viciously, it actually begins to dig a hole in the ground. The horrible, evil, rotting flesh smell of hell, and the burning brimstone, and he feels the heat, the horrible heat of hell burning on his skin. He's terrified. He looks around, he doesn't know what he's going to do. He looks forward and he sees the horrible face of hell, the uber demon coming towards him. Terror is filling his head. The uber demon comes towards him and he opens his mouth and the horrible sound of hell comes out of his mouth, and Jimmy hears the horrible sound of hell. He feels himself start to melt into the lava below. He sees the dog melt, he sees Harpool melt, he sees Poster Nutbag melt, and they all melt and begin to drip into the hot lava below.
Thank you. policeman came to my house. Hey, Marky, super policeman. Policeman came to my house. Woke up this morning. Goo-balls. I said, hey, Marky, super policeman. Policeman came to my house. Hey, Marky, super policeman. Policeman came to my house. Hey, Marky, super policeman. Policeman came to my house. Hey, Marky, super policeman.
Thank you. Jimmy, I have bad news. What would that be, Dad? It's about your cat. You mean poster?
Take it, Leo. Space. And I
I remember waiting for Lost in Space to come on, and there was this one particular Saturday where I made my French toast and I sat down in front of the TV and I'm sitting there and I'm waiting for Lost in Space to come on. 5 o'clock comes along, Lost in Space comes on, sitting there eating my French toast. And I had this little rubber ball that I used to play with that was sort of like shaped like an udder, had udders coming all off it. And I'm sitting there watching Lost in Space, and about halfway through the TV show, there was this part where Will Robinson and the robot, you know, they're walking along one of those cheesy sets in Lost in Space. They go around the corner, and they end up in this sort of clearing. And this clearing, the weird thing about it was I'm sitting there watching TV, and I'm thinking this clearing is the identical clearing that is behind the school that I went to, the John Witherspoon School, the school that I mentioned before. And it was a place that I'd been before. So I'm watching TV and I'm thinking, here's Will Robinson and the robot hanging out in this clearing that I go to during recess in fourth grade. A completely strange moment. And I look down at the foot of the robot. I know this is a long story, but it's very profound and important, so please listen. Changed my life. And at the foot of the robot is this utter ball squeezing squeak toy that I also had in my hand. So this completely, you know, I'm sitting here looking, here's this clearing of the utter ball, and suddenly I realize that the robot is sending messages directly into my brain from the TV. And the messages are telling me, for the next week, I want you to collect little bits of food from the kitchen table whenever you have a meal and put it in your lunchbox and bring it to school. So the next morning, I wake up and I go to breakfast and we have fried eggs. And I put a fried egg into my lunchbox and I brought it to school. I still don't know what all this means. And, you know, dinner that night, we had a steak and I put a steak into my lunchbox. Olives, you know, olive loaf, the whole thing, and little bits of food. And every day I'm bringing the stuff in my lunchbox to school. Well, on Friday of that week, I suddenly had a profound feeling that I needed to be drawn to this spot out behind the middle school. And I started walking with my lunchbox full of food. Now, when I got to this little clearing that I had seen in the Lost in Space episode, I noticed that burned into the ground, there was a pentagram. Burned into the grass, a star, a five-pointed star. And I was 10 years old, so I opened up my lunchbox, and I take out the fried egg, and I knew what I had to do. I placed it on one corner of the pentagram on the star. And then I reached in and I took out the steak, and I placed it on the next corner of the star. I reached into my lunchbox and I pulled out the olive loaf. I placed it on the next corner of the star. I then reached into my lunchbox and I pulled out a carton of milk. I placed the carton of milk on the third star. I reached into my lunchbox. I pulled out a sloppy joe. I placed it on the fourth star of the pentagram. I reached into my lunchbox. I pulled out a Slim Jim. I placed it on the fifth star.
The Slim Jim.
The only thing left was the other ball. I knew what I had to do. Hang on. I took the other ball. And I knew from watching the episode of Lost in Space and from the telepathic messages that the robot and Will Robinson had sent into my brain that I needed to place the utter ball into the center of the pentagram, and I placed it in the center of the pentagram. At that point, strange things began to happen. up around me. And it started to swirl around, and as the wind swirled around, it swirled around. The leaves began to lift up off the ground. I started to get a little bit scared. And the wind turned and turned and turned, and a big fog began to roll in. A fog began to roll in. And the wind is spinning and spinning faster and faster. Paige's face come out, but I didn't know who he was at the time, and Mike and bits of the band, and then it became very terrifying, you know, that these strange apparitions coming up to my face, and the next thing I know, a strange white being started to walk towards me, and he started to sing a song, and singing this song, it was the most beautiful music I had ever heard. It was like music in the spheres. It was heavenly. And this man, this strange angelic man, walked towards me, and he had on white clothes and strange black square glasses. And he walked towards me and he sang me a song. And in singing the song, he told me what my life had become. And it wasn't until years later, many years later, that I recognized who this person was, that it was indeed my friend Tom. And he had come into the past to sing me a song that would describe my future.
I'm gonna be the guy who said it to you. And I am the one. Oh,
precious birthday fudge, swamp knife, wool mail. Walk it undone, me and a pro. You couldn't care fewer, it happens all the time. Repeat, Okimo. The story starts with Jimmy, who lives in this little town, and it's a beautiful little town surrounded by lots and lots of mountains. It's a very wilderness-oriented area, but in the middle of it is this town started by a man with a vision. Jimmy's ancestor, he had a vision of a beautiful town, and so this town grew. And anyway, Jimmy grew up in this town, in this little suburban house, and he loved it. Everybody was really happy and really nice. It was a great place, but every once in a while, he felt like he had to leave town to go someplace where the action was. It wasn't the most action-filled place. So, in this particular story, on this day, Jimmy decides that he's gonna leave his house, and I'm gonna cut right to the chase here with his cat, Poster Nutbag. And they're gonna leave his little town and they're gonna go to Las Vegas, right? So, may have heard this story once before, but he walks through the desert, he sits by a campfire, he hears yodelers. Anyway, he walks from this very distant town to Las Vegas. But this time, the story is a little different. When he gets to Las Vegas, he finds out that it's just too crazy. There's too many people. It's just too much for him. He can't take it. So he wants to go. There was, he wants to see a concert when he's there, but it's hard to get tickets and all that stuff. So anyway, he goes back. He decides to hitch a ride with this guy who's going back to Salt Lake City, which is the town. And he hitches a ride. It's like a 7-hour ride. And he gets in the car with the guy and he says, I'm going to go see this concert in Salt Lake City tomorrow night. And so they start driving. And as they're driving, this guy puts on this album. And it's one of Jimmy's favorite albums. So as he's driving along, it turns to night and the sun goes down and they get to do this beautiful long drive through the desert. And as they're driving, they listen to this beautiful music that they love so much. And it turns out to be an incredible drive through the desert, listening. smiles you give and tears you cry, and all you touch and all you see is all your life will ever be. Thank you.
Why should I be afraid to die? There's no reason for it. Thank you.
Dad. Jimmy, I have bad news. What is it, Dad? It's about your cat poster. You mean poster in the bag? Thank you.
So the first thing he does is he packs up our fluid poster nut bag, and he gets out his old, rusty old pickup truck, and he thinks that maybe he can find it by going on the road, traveling down the road, and just searching randomly. And he's driving along in his car, he's got his little acoustic guitar, and he pulls over and sits there, and he's feeling a little blue, and first thing he does is he looks over at our fluid, and he decides to sing a little sad song.
Living at the bittersweet moment. hotel. Halfway between Erie and Pittsburgh, I float me through a hell. On the highway to the bittersweet motel.
He decides that he will join a rock band. So he joins a rock band and goes on the road, and he looks surprisingly, just in case you never knew what Jimmy looked like, he looks a lot like this. So he goes out, he finds a couple of friends, and he gets together in a rock band, and he goes on the road, and he starts thinking that maybe he's on his way to finding it. And despite the fact that he wears a silly little dress and everything, he finds that there's plenty of it on the road. It is coming to him all over. Every night he's meeting it. It's incredible. It is. He's meeting it until it gets to the point where people in the parking lot are making stickers that say, Jimmy hit on him. But anyway, that's a whole different story. So he goes through a couple of years on the road, thinks they found it, but suddenly he finds himself listless again. He realizes that, you know, that he once again has not found meaning, that he needs something even more than the gift that he was chasing on the road. And one day he's sitting there, and then it happens. He finds the meaning of life. Fish, why don't you come out and sing us a little song? It's called What Happened to You.
Thank you. since I met you, baby. Thank you.